Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading MRT for Friday, September 27th, 2024. MISD approves Ranchland Hills sale. Concerned residents say they're preparing to fight back. By Trevor Haas, editorial director. Signs point to Ranchland Hills Golf Club closing soon to make way for a new Midland High, but that doesn't mean all of its assets will go to waste. However, there is concern that possible litigation revealed this week could mean trouble for the turf. On September 17th, the Midland ISD Board of Trustees approved a memorandum of understanding with Reeves County for the purchase and removal of 15,000 square feet of putting green sod for $18,750 or $1.25 per square foot. In total, Ranchland Hills has just under 3 acres, or about 130,600 square feet, of putting greens, including the practice green, according to Jim Wires, the course superintendent. On Tuesday, concerned residents told City Council that they have secured legal counsel and are working to stop MISD from destroying the golf course, which the district purchased in early 2019 and has owned since. The land was slated to become the future location of a new Midland High in the 2019 school bond, which failed, and again in the 2023 school bond, which passed. The course has remained in operation since the sale, being run by Ranchland Golf Partners. Former Ranchland Hills general manager Ken Livingston has expressed concerns about removing the greens given the possibility of litigation. If you do have any chance of saving the course, the people who are concerned need to understand that it's not as easy as turning the lights back on and getting back to work after you've shut down, he told the Reporter Telegram. Livingston is especially concerned about what happens if the greens are removed. He said that in his combined 14 years working at the course, we had done everything from single green replacements to full-blown replacements. It's very hard to get greens back going once they're gone. He said the course had experimented with several types of grasses to get the greens just right. In 1996, we tried a Champion Bermuda grass hybrid that worked wonderfully for the water supply, he said, but it wasn't nearly the putting surface that you can achieve with creeping bent grass. Bent grass is typically found in northern states, while Bermuda grass is more common in the south, according to a 2020 Golf Magazine article, but this is a guideline, not the rule. Water quality was the issue holding creeping bent grass from taking hold in Ranchland Hills, living said, but once we got the right water filtration system to get rid of the solids, bent grass started to flourish. The court uses a variety called Dominant Plus Creeping Bent Grass. The creeping bent grass greens we have at Ranchland Hills are honestly among the best in this part of the world, he said. It wasn't clear Thursday why Reeves County purchased only 15,000 square feet, about 3 holes worth, presumably for its Reeves County golf course. Nor was the timeline for the removal of the greens known. Attempts to contact Reeves County Golf Course and Midland ISD for insights were unsuccessful.
St. Anne's Family Fair returns for 76th year by B.K. Richter, staff writer. The St. Anne's Family Fair is back for its 76th annual edition. This year's celebration, hailed as the biggest one-day event in Midland, is slated for Saturday. Laura Iquinello is one of the co-chairs of the board, said that general admission to the fair is free, with all proceeds benefiting St. Anne's Parish and School. The fair has a very long tradition, she said. Even the concert has free admission. However, the food and alcohol will cost. This year, the fair will offer more than 65 booths aimed not only to entertain the younger crowd, but also the older as well. We will host bingo at the gymnasium all day long, Iquinello said. Another part of the event is the raffle, which has more than 25 prizes and carries a grand prize of a 2024 Mercedes GLC for food and beverage options. Iquinello says numerous beer vendors will be in attendance, including Tall City Brewery. A wide variety of food will be available, as well as brisket, tacos, turkey legs, funnel cakes, snow cones, ice cream, corn on the cob, and more. It is important to note that while ATMs will be on site for Saturday, the fair will be switching over to a card system this year instead of tickets. This is similar to what you would see in a bowling alley or arcade, Iquinello said. Another difference is the carnival will not be returning this year, but parents can play on their activities such as bounce houses, a rock wall, a mechanical bull, a batting cage, and other family-friendly activities.
Dry, warm forecast for Texas weekend games by Trevor Haas, editorial director. A high-pressure ridge centered over the West Texas town of El Paso is keeping the ground dry and temperatures high across Texas this weekend. Though if you're going to a game night, you might want to bring a jacket.
Here's a look at the National Weather Service forecast for Texas teams of interest. Greenwood, Midland Christian, and Trinity School are all playing in Midland County. The Rangers play host to Pecos, the Mustangs take on Woolforth, Friendship, and the Chargers square off against Garden City. The forecast calls for sunny skies with a high of 89 during the day and clear skies with a low of 61 in the evening. Winds will blow at about 5 miles per hour. TLCA will be in the Permian Basin at Fort Davis. Holy Cross is headed to Grand Falls Royalty. Legacy High will challenge Louisiana powerhouse Ruston at Choctaw Stadium, former home of the Texas Rangers Ball Club in Arlington. The weather will be much like Midland, except that winds could gust as high as 20 miles per hour during the day, though calming down to 5 miles per hour in the evening. Midland High is off. UTPB is traveling to Wichita Falls for a 7 p.m. game at Midwestern State University. Saturday night will be partly cloudy with a low of 59 and north winds blowing between 6 and 11 miles per hour. Texas Tech's homestand continues against Big 12 newcomers Cincinnati. The game starts at 7 p.m. No need to pack a poncho this week. The low is forecast to be 57 degrees. Skies will be partly cloudy with northeast winds blowing at 5 to 10 miles per hour. The University of Texas, which is ranked number 1 on the AP poll, plays host to Mississippi State at 3:15 p.m. It'll be sunny in Austin with a high of 94 degrees and calm winds turning to 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Number 24, Texas A&M's taking on Arkansas at home at 2:30 p.m. If you're headed to College Station, bring your sunscreen. The forecast calls for a high of 91 degrees with sunny skies and north winds blowing 5 to 10 miles per hour. Dallas Cowboys will play the night game against division rival New York Giants. Arlington has expected low of 63, and you'll see mostly cloudy skies outside the dome. Texans, if you're headed to Houston to catch the take on the Jaguars for a noon game, the forecast calls for sunny skies with a high near 91. Week of Caring raises 3,000 food items and $2,500 for local pantries. By Kesley Salinas, staff writer. United Way of Midland raised over 3,000 non-perishable food items and 2,500 for 9 local food pantries during their Week of Caring food drive. On Thursday, United Way of Midland held a celebration and food drive pickup for the recipients to pick up the donated goods. Week of Caring has been going on for a while, but this is the first year that the United Way decided to partner with local businesses to help the smaller local food pantries, said Emily Haleva, the board chair at United Way of Midland. It's a new initiative to an old tradition. United Way's Week of Caring involved partnering up with local businesses such as Atmos Energy, Blue Sky Midland, the City of Midland, Chevron, HEB, Kendra Scott, Market Street, Midland College, Encore, and United Supermarkets. United Supermarkets was a collection point for donations, said John Jameson, Regional Vice President for United Supermarkets in Midland, Odessa, and Eastern New Mexico. We did a kickoff meeting, had announcements over our intercoms, and encouraged our cashiers to inform customers about the food drive. Jameson said that United Supermarkets also put up a sign detailing which food pantries will be awarded. He added that he stopped by the stores a couple of times and saw that the donation bin was full. It was a good turnout, and I hope we can create more excitement about it, Jameson said. I love seeing all the volunteers and companies pitching in to help. We're truly serving our community, and I think everyone coming together is just as important as all the food we've raised. In addition to the food items that the drive collected, local food pantries also received a $300 donation. Atmos Energy donated $2,500 to the Week of Caring food drive, said Serena Benuelos, United Way Community Navigator Specialist. We were able to split that between all the food pantries so that each one received around $300. Holova said that over 30 people volunteered and helped contribute to their Week of Caring food drive. The 9 recipients of the goods donated included Bethel Missionary Baptist Church, Casa de Amigos, Faith Temple Church, First Christian Church, Jubilee Center of Midland, Martin County Food Pantry, Midland College, Family Promise of Midland, and Midland ISD Family Support. Last month, United Way reached out to us to see if we wanted to participate in their Week of Caring, said Billy Ashley, pastor of Bethel Missionary Baptist Church. We really appreciate it because it will help us distribute to our families who are in need. Ashley added that families who use Bethel's food pantry are not required to be members of the church. However, they must fill out an application with their address, family size, and income. There's no discrimination for who receives goods, but the form lets us adjust each box to fit the family's needs. Ashley said, "We are appreciative of the United Way and any donations that we receive because it helps us meet the needs of God's people." Emily Holeva, board chair of the United Way, says that the board is proud of the initiative that the staff helped create during this year's Week of Caring. She added that United Way always welcomes donations and volunteers. "I would encourage the public who are interested in being involved with United Way to visit our website or come into the office and reach out to the staff members to learn more about us," Holeva said. Week of Caring raises 3,000 food items and $2,500 for local pantries. By Kesley Salinas, staff writer. United Way of Midland raised over 3,000 non-perishable food items and $2,500 for 9 local food pantries during their Week of Caring food drive. On Thursday, United Way of Midland held a celebration and food drive pickup for the recipients to pick up the donated goods. Week of Caring has been going on for a while, but this is the first year that the United Way decided to partner with local businesses to help the smaller local food pantries, said Emily Holeva, the board chair at United Way of Midland. "It's a new initiative to an old tradition. United Way's Week of Caring involved partnering up with local businesses such as Atmos Energy, Blue Sky Midland, the City of Midland, Chevron, HEB, Kendra Scott, Market Street, Midland College, Encore, and United Supermarkets. United Supermarkets was a collection point for donations," said John Jameson, Regional Vice President for United Supermarkets in Midland, Odessa, and Eastern New Mexico. "We did a kickoff meeting, had announcements over our intercoms, and encouraged our cashiers to inform customers about the food drive." Jameson said that United Supermarkets also put up a sign detailing which food pantries will be awarded. He added that he stopped by the stores a couple of times and saw that the donation bin was full. "It was a good turnout, and I hope we can create more excitement about it," Jameson said. "I love seeing all the volunteers and companies pitching in to help. We're truly serving our community, and I think everyone coming together is just as important as all the food we've raised." In addition to the food items that the drive collected, local food pantries also received a $300 donation. Atmos Energy donated $2,500 to the Week of Caring food drive, said Serena Benuelos, United Way Community Navigator Specialist. "We were able to split that between all the food pantries so that each one received around $300. Holeva said that over 30 people volunteered and helped contribute to their Week of Caring food drive. The 9 recipients of the goods donated included Bethel Missionary Baptist Church, Casa de Amigos, Faith Temple Church, First Christian Church, Jubilee Center of Midland, Martin County Food Pantry, Midland College, Family Promise of Midland, and Midland ISD Family Support. "Last month, United Way reached out to us to see if we wanted to participate in their Week of Caring," said Billy Ashley, pastor of Bethel Missionary Baptist Church. "We really appreciate it because it will help us distribute to our families who are in need." Ashley added that families who use Bethel's food pantry are not required to be members of the church. However, they must fill out an application with their address, family size, and income. "There's no discrimination for who receives goods. There's no discrimination for who receives goods, but the form lets us adjust each box to fit the family's needs," Ashley said. "We are appreciative of the United Way and any donations that we receive because it helps us meet the needs of God's people." Emily Holeva, board chair of the United Way, says that the board is proud of the initiative that the staff helped create during this year's Week of Caring. She added that United Way always welcomes donations and volunteers. "I would encourage the public who are interested in being involved with United Way to visit our website or come into the office and reach out to the staff members to learn more about us," Holeva said. Permian Electric Reliability Plan gets final okay. By Mella McEwen, oil editor. Efforts to meet the Permian Basin's future electric needs officially got underway Thursday when the Public Utility Commission of Texas approved the Permian Electric Reliability Plan. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas forecasts electricity demand in the Permian Basin will grow to approximately 26 gigawatts by 2038, which is equivalent to almost one-third of the current summer demand of the entire ERCOT system. The plan approved by PUC commissioners includes two categories of transmission infrastructure to support the region's current and future power needs: new and upgraded local transmission projects to strengthen the area's transmission service, and new import paths that will bring additional power to the region to serve the area's growing electricity needs. The approval also outlines procedural next steps for implementing the plan, including direction to the transmission companies that will be preparing to build the projects and commission oversight of the plan's completion. Efforts to boost Permian Basin power are already being seen in Ward County, where county commissioners approved a partial 10-year tax abatement for Competitive Power Ventures' planned 1,350-megawatt natural gas combined cycle power plant. The company's Basin Ranch Energy Center was among those granted an 8-month review period for a low-interest loan under the Texas Energy Fund program. The project is anticipated to include $3 billion in investment, and the action by Ward County commissioners will reduce county property taxes at the center by 40% for the first 10 years of operation. Adoption of the Permian Electric Reliability Plan drew full support from the area's oil and gas industry, which is helping drive demand growth as it increasingly electrifies its operations. We will get much-needed relief, Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Petroleum Association, told the Reporter-Telegram. This will let the Permian Basin continue to operate for a long time to come, he added. The Permian Basin needs power. Shepard was joined by Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, and Carr Ingham, president of the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, and not only praising the decision, but the work of the PUC commissioners and staff, ERCOT legislators, and Governor Abbott and Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick for supporting the power needs of the Permian Basin. The Permian Basin is the heartbeat of our state and nation's energy dominance and economy. This plan is a roadmap that will ensure electric reliability in the region for decades to come and facilitate critical transmission infrastructure investment that will ensure the continued success of Texas's oil and gas industry and support the region's local communities and our entire state, said PUC Commissioner Lori Kobos in a statement. The plan has its roots in House Bill 5066, authored by Representative Charlie Guerin, and had support from Senator Charles Swertner. It was also supported by local leaders, including the plan has its roots in House Bill 5066, authored by Representative Charlie Green, and had support from Senator Charles Swertner. It was also supported by local leaders, including State Representatives Drew Darby, Tom Craddock, and Brooks Landgraf, as well as State Senator Kevin Sparks. Permian Electric Reliability Plan gets final okay by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Efforts to meet the Permian Basin's future electric needs officially got underway Thursday when the Public Utility Commission of Texas approved the Permian Electric Reliability Plan. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas forecast electricity demand in the Permian Basin will grow to approximately 26 gigawatts by 2038, which is equivalent to almost one-third of the current summer demand of the entire ERCOT system. The plan approved by PUC commissioners includes two categories of transmission infrastructure to support the region's current and future power needs: new and upgraded local transmission projects to strengthen the area's transmission service, and new import paths that will bring additional power to the region to serve the area's growing electricity needs. The approval also outlines procedural next steps for implementing the plan, including direction to the transmission companies that will be preparing to build the projects and commission oversight of the plan's completion. Efforts to boost Permian Basin power are already being seen in Ward County, where county commissioners approved a partial 10-year tax abatement for Competitive Power Ventures' planned 1,350-megawatt natural gas combined cycle power plant. The company's Basin Ranch Energy Center was among those granted an 8-month review period for a low-interest loan under the Texas Energy Fund program. The project is anticipated to include $3 billion in investment, and the action by Ward County Commissioners will reduce county property taxes at the center by 40% for the first 10 years of operation. Adoption of the Permian Electric Reliability Plan drew full support from the area's oil and gas industry, which is helping drive demand growth and is increasingly electrifies its operations.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, September 21st, 2024. Religion. Peter saved from death to finish work. Story of miraculous escape encourages faith in God by Bob Campbell. The Apostle Peter's miraculous escape from prison and a death sentence in Acts 12:3-19 probably amazed him as much as it did King Herod, his captors, and the friends who had been praying earnestly for his release. The Reverends Mark Rusink and Tim O'Neill say an angel tapped Peter on his side and exclaimed, "Quick, get up," as the chains fell off the apostle's wrists, then said, "Put on your clothes and sandals, wrap your cloak around you, and follow me." They passed the guards and went out through an iron gate that opened by itself, and the angel left Peter when they had walked the length of a street. The first thing this story tells us is that our supernatural God can do anything, whether it be in the early church or today, said the Reverend Rusink, pastor of Westover Baptist Church. I think Peter simply accepted whatever God would do for him, whether it be deliverance or death at the hands of Herod. I don't think he was absolutely certain what would happen, and he was very surprised when the angel woke him up and the chains fell off. Rusink said the story also illustrates the power of prayer. Prayer was a critical practice in the church at that time when people got together in unity and harmony and in humble submission, asked God that his will be done. He said, it goes along with James 5:16, which says, the prayer of a righteous man is powerful and effective. God wasn't done with Peter yet. He had more for him to accomplish with his ministry and influence. This is an amazing supernatural thing that God could still do today if he chose to. The Reverend O'Neill, pastor of Refuge Ministries, said it is unknown what angel freed Peter. There were four squads of four guards, each standing watch over him, and yet God made a way for him to walk right out of there, O'Neill said. Regardless of what the circumstance is, you can always trust in God to deliver you. All the believers had gathered around and were praying for Peter's release. It could have been any angel. He said the apostle was shocked by what was happening, but he had been so at peace about his situation and its outcome that he was sleeping soundly and initially thought he was dreaming when the angel appeared. When we pray for God to intercede on our behalf, he often does so in a way we are not expecting, O'Neill said. Peter had peace of mind knowing God was in control. He was sleeping like Jesus was sleeping in the boat before he stood up and told the wind to be silent and the sea to quiet down. He said Peter was rescued because he was one of the foundational people for building God's church, and he still had important work to do. He knocked at the door where all the believers were gathered, and the servant girl, Rhoda, recognized his voice and called to the others, "Hey, Peter is standing at the front door right now." And they said, "You are out of your mind." Power to Please Him by Tracy Villatoro, worship leader at Victory Church, Odessa. When I was a little girl, I remember my mother coming into my room before I went to sleep, and she would sit beside me on my bed and would say, "Okay, say your prayers." I'm sure I probably said things like, "Thank you, Lord, for my mommy and daddy. Thank you for my brother," etc. You know, those types of things. But there was one particular thing that I remember saying every single night, and it was this: "Dear Lord, help me to do what you want me to do." Where I got that from, I have no idea. I don't remember my mom ever telling me to say that. I just said it for some reason, and I have never forgotten it. This morning, as I was doing my daily devotion, I came across this verse that I do not remember ever reading. It is Philippians 2:13b. "He helps you want to do what pleases him, and he gives you the power to do it." I have always thought about the scripture Romans 7:18, where it says, "Yes, I know that nothing good lives in me." I mean, nothing good lives in the part of me that is not spiritual. I want to do what is good, but I don't do it. But when I read Philippians 2:13b this morning, it really encouraged me. Not only does the Lord place the desire in me to want to do what pleases him, but he also gives me the power to do those things that please him. Now I see that the Lord has been placing those desires inside my heart ever since I was a little child, and I didn't realize it. It is definitely a war inside each of us. Spiritually, we want to do what is right, but it is the sin living inside of us that does it, according to Romans 7:20b. It doesn't matter how young or old you are. Every one of us face challenges and trials every day. I may be more spiritually mature in my later years now, but that doesn't mean I don't face problems like everyone else. I have learned that my strength comes from the Lord, and only the Lord. I turn to Him every day, all day. I pray you do the same today. Features from the Bible. Truth in Scripture. Jehoshaphat and Ahab as allies. 1 Kings 22, 2 Chronicles 18. Jehoshaphat, son of Asa, became king of Judah in the fourth year of Ahab, king of Israel. Soon he visited Ahab, the king of Israel. Ahab wanted to reclaim Ramoth Gilead from Aram. He and Jehoshaphat made an alliance. Jehoshaphat wanted to seek the Lord's counsel before he went to war against Aram. Ahab brought together the prophets, about 400 men, and asked them about going to war for Ramoth Gilead. They told them to go, and they would be successful. Jehoshaphat insisted on hearing from a prophet of the Lord, so Ahab brought forth Micaiah, who always told Ahab the truth. Micaiah told Ahab and Jehoshaphat that he saw Israel scattered on the hills like sheep without a shepherd, and that the Lord said, "These people have no master. Let each one go home in peace." The king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, "Didn't I tell you that he never prophesies anything good about me, but only bad?" Micaiah was slapped in the face and sent off to prison. Israel and Judah went to battle at Ramoth Gilead, where Ahab was hit with an arrow between the sections of his armor. The king propped himself up in the chariot, facing the Arameans, where he remained all day. The blood from his wound ran onto the floor of the chariot, and that evening he died. As the sun was setting, a cry spread through the army. Every man to his town, everyone to his land. Ahab was buried in Samaria. His chariot was brought to a pool in Samaria, where the prostitutes bathed, and the dogs licked up his blood, as the word of the Lord had declared.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, September 21st. ConocoPhillips manager highlights global shale plays. Luis Baez speaks at West Texas Geological Society luncheon. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Luis Baez took those attending the West Texas Geological Society's networking luncheon on a global tour of unconventional shale plays. The Permian Basin water manager for ConocoPhillips began with the Bowen Surratt and Beetaloo basins in Australia. Then Baez moved north to China with its numerous unconventional plays across the country. Then it was on to the Middle East, from Saudi Arabia to Oman to the United Arab Emirates. Finally, Baez took his audience to South America and Argentina's Vaca Muerta play that rivals the Permian Basin with 16 billion barrels of oil and 308 trillion cubic feet of natural gas, seen as technically recoverable. The common thread among these destinations is the Permian Basin, Baez said, with its gift of great geology, operating excellence by industry, diverse supply chains, and a favorable commercial environment. There is also an excellent infrastructure of service provider, operators, and pipelines. Those gifts have allowed the industry to significantly increase production through innovation and export the knowledge gained through that innovation to the globe's other shale plays. Quote, in Saudi Arabia, you see Americans, you see Europeans providing operational excellence, he said. But the foundation of all the Permian Basin's energy gifts is its geoscientists, Baez said. He cited geoscientists' role in play-based evaluation, analysis, continuous learning, operating excellence, technical innovation, field trials, and design quality. Quote, we're constantly asking for more, one more core, one more analysis. We're constantly challenging ourselves, he said. Baez said those challenges include managing produced water and induced seismicity. Quote, we need to get back to basics on seismicity, he said. Symposium offers Permian 101 lesson on shale production. The story was written by Miller McEwen, oil editor. Those attending the West Texas Geological Society's Fall Symposium were in for a Permian 101 lesson after a day and a half of presentations and poster sessions. Providing the first lesson was Tim McMahon, project manager of the Tight Oil Resource Assessment, or TORA, consortium at the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin. The oil industry veteran, whose experience includes 10 years at ConocoPhillips, told his audience it was about 2006 when U.S. shale production began coming online. But, McMahon noted, shale production in the U.S. has a 200-year history that dates back to the first commercial natural gas well in Fredonia, New York, in 1825. Since then, production of both shale oil and natural gas has spread to the Niobrara, to the Woodford, to the Hugoton Field on Kansas, to the Eagle Ford, Fort Worth Barnett, to the Bakken. In 2002, Devon Energy first successfully hydraulically fractured a horizontal well in the Bakken, he said, and the practice has spread to other plays. The Arab oil embargo of 1973 that sent crude oil and gasoline prices climbing spurred research into shale and other unconventional resources, he noted. McMahon provided an overview of the various shale plays from the Marcellus to the Woodford, found primarily in Oklahoma, but extending into the Permian Basin, from the Bakken of North Dakota and Montana to the Barnett in the Fort Worth Basin. What all of these areas have in common is the shales were deposited in semi-restricted basins with access to the open ocean and produce from brittle interbeds, according to McMahon. The Permian Basin seems to have especially benefited from those depositions, enjoying a lot of benches from the Wolfcamp A, B, C, and D to the Bone Spring and Spraberry. Less than a quarter of the oil in place in the Permian Basin is technically recoverable, not economically recoverable, though both being technically recoverable and economically recoverable are moving targets, he said. Approximately 75% of the nation's shale oil comes from Texas, and of that, 63% is from the Permian Basin. Approximately 40% of the nation's natural gas is associated with oil production, and 38% of that is from Texas. Of the Texas production, 23% comes from the Permian Basin. The share of the nation's oil production coming from unconventional resources surpassed conventional production in 2017 and now stands at more than 60%. Quote, shale has gone from a minor contributor to the dominant source due to technical innovations, said McMahon. The resources are significant, end quote. Explosion at Energy Transfer Pipeline prompts safety concerns. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. An explosion at an Energy Transfer natural gas liquids pipeline in the Houston suburbs of Deer Park and LaPorte has drawn the spotlight to issues of pipeline safety. The explosion occurred when an SUV hit an above-ground valve on the underground pipeline, causing the evacuation of nearly 1,000 homes at one point and schools to shelter in place. Quote, a pipeline company's highest priority is the safety of its crew, its assets, and the communities it serves. Pipelines are the safest, most reliable, efficient, and economic means of transporting natural gas, crude, and refined petroleum products, Thur Cannon, President, Texas Pipeline Association, told the Reporter-Telegram. Quote, following an incident such as this, which is rare, the industry will always assess its systems. Texas's more than 489,000 miles of pipeline are vital to this nation's energy infrastructure as they continue to deliver the essential hydrocarbons that support our homes and businesses, he continued. There are regulations from 2022 aimed at reducing deaths, injuries, and environmental damage from pipeline ruptures, but these regulations apply to gas lines, not those carrying hazardous liquids, and do not apply to this pipeline, Kenneth Clarkson, Communications Director with Pipeline Safety Trust, a nonprofit that promotes pipeline safety through education and advocacy, told the Reporter-Telegram. The regulations issued in the spring of 2022 require pipeline companies to install emergency valves that can quickly shut off the flow of oil, natural gas, or other hazardous fuels when pipelines rupture. In this case, however, there was so much liquid in a 20-mile stretch of the pipeline between two closed valves that authorities and Energy Transfer had to wait several days for the fire to burn itself out before they could begin investigations or repair work. Quote, another issue from a safety perspective is that many new pipeline safety regulations do not apply retroactively to existing pipelines, Clarkson added. For example, he said, the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration enacted new rules on the types of valves and their locations, but those safety improvements only apply to new or replaced pipelines, not the existing pipeline involved in the explosion, he wrote. Quote, one of the biggest shortcomings is there are no federal regulations that govern the location of pipelines near homes and businesses. Those are often left to local zoning ordinances, which are terribly inconsistent at best, Clarkson wrote. The valve hit by the vehicle had been surrounded by chain-link fencing and topped with barbed wire. But Clarkson said operators can do more to prevent vehicles from damaging their infrastructure, and they have a public responsibility to do so. He recommended installing bollards or other protective equipment. Quote, we don't know enough about this particular piece of infrastructure to know what Energy Transfer did or did not do to protect the public, but obviously it was not enough, he added. He went on to note that in 2022, the company had a similar pipeline fire, and according to Texas Railroad Commission data, the operator has already had 8 incidents in 2024. Quote, Energy Transfer needs to look at their safety culture and protect the people and environment near their pipelines, Clarkson concluded. EIA finds low heat content in Texas natural gas. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Permian Basin natural gas volumes have climbed alongside crude production, and operators are increasingly banking premiums, particularly for the ethane extracted from that natural gas. A recent report from the Energy Information Administration finds the natural gas liquids content of wet natural gas produced in the Permian Basin is among the highest nationwide. According to EIA analysts, the natural gas produced in association with crude oil in the Permian Basin's 3 largest plays has tripled since 2018, according to Trinity Manning Pickett, economist in the EIA's natural gas team, told the Reporter Telegram. Even so, the authors of the report note that the heat content of dry natural gas delivered to Texas consumers was among the lowest nationwide in 2023. Natural gas pipelines generally require heat content to be within a certain range to safely transport dry natural gas, and manufacturers of devices that use natural gas as fuel will design them to work within a certain range of heat content, Jordan Young, economist with the EIA's natural gas team, told the Reporter Telegram. The heat content of natural gas is a measure of how much energy is contained within the gas, how hot the gas burns. Wet natural gas is composed primarily of methane, but also contains ethane, propane, and other hydrocarbon gases, which have greater heat content than methane. Ethane, propane, and other hydrocarbon components are removed from the wet natural gas through cryogenic or other processes to create natural gas liquids. The reduced concentration of NGLs lowers the heat content of the resulting dry natural gas and allows more methane volume to be safely transported at higher pressures via pipeline. With Texas operators facing pipeline takeaway capacity restraints, the recovery of more NGLs, particularly ethane from the natural gas stream, allows natural gas pipelines in the Permian to transport more methane. In addition, by removing more NGLs, especially ethane, producers are capitalizing on favorable differences between the price of natural gas and natural gas liquids. Ethane made up 44% of the NGL removed from the natural gas stream in the Permian Basin in 2023, and propane represented an additional 30%, according to the EIA. Once the natural gas meets pipeline quality standards, natural gas plant operators can choose to recover additional ethane from the natural gas stream when prices create a favorable premium. The ethane premium to natural gas has increased in recent years in response to growing demand in domestic and international petrochemical markets. Excluding the severe impact of Winter Storm Uri on natural gas prices in early 2021, the annual average ethane premium in the United States has risen every year since 2019 from 79 cents per million British thermal units, or MMBTU, to $1.47 per MMBTU in 2023, according to data from Bloomberg and Natural Gas Intelligence.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.